people who love them.
Hello, and once again, welcome to The Thing About Cars. We're sitting here at Strongbox West, recording for you as usual. At the table with me today are...
Becca.
Ben.
Katie.
And I'm Mickey. Thanks for joining us. We're going to just jump right in today. I have this question since I've been, you know, working on my own car recently and helping other people fix their foggy headlights. You know, we have this whole aftermarket solution to fix headlights that have become foggy to the point of becoming opaque. Why is it that we can't just produce a headlight that doesn't require this anymore? And I know Becca originally had some questions about how exactly they get foggy and stuff like that. What were you asking?
Right. Well, my question was more about not how to fix it, but why do they become foggy? Is it a coating? Because I believe they do have a coating on the headlights, correct? Is it something about the plastic? Is it a combination of the heat from the headlights and the plastic? Is it the coating itself? What's the mechanism that's causing the headlights to do this?
I think it's some of all the above, probably. Because it is plastic, you know, it's a cost-effective material to make stuff out of. The combination of all the elemental exposure just makes that surface less smooth and shiny.
But how many people... Serious question. It might be a silly question. I have an older car. I know my taillights have never fogged over. Is it really just the plastic?
Well, the taillights are exposed to all the same things. They don't get as hot because they don't have a, you know, a 55-watt bulb behind them, you know,
right,
glowing for a lot of time. They don't get the oncoming abrasion from wind, rain, bugs, and things.
Particulate matter.
Right. The headlight is just exposed to a lot more torture than a taillight.
But and then again, you've got the tailpipe with all the carbon and everything coming out the taillight. So that's
negligible.
Right. Is there one thing?
Do we know that headlights are made from the same plastic as taillights?
I believe they are.
I don't know. Maybe not. That's a good question.
Because we can clean them up. It's not the greatest solution in the world, but you know that whole progressively fine or grit wet sanding, and then you spray the thing off with some clear coat when you're done. You know, that does help make things better. But I mean... Why? I mean, it's like it's a headlight. It's an important part of your vehicle. I feel like if I buy a new car and it has plastic headlights on it, I should ask them for one of those kits just for free. You know,
it's
like,
on the other hand, unless you live out in the countryside, your headlight does more to make you visible than to give you visibility to see where you're going. As long as somebody else can see something glowing on the front of your car at night, they know you're there. But if you live in a big city, you can see where you're going without it even turned on most of the time. So.
Right, because there's plenty of light everywhere. There's
which explains why so many people are driving around without their headlights on.
Oh, yes. I think we've covered that before here.
So what have you got? What else is on your mind these days?
Well, there was an incident, and probably a lot of people have heard about this already. It was one of these viral internet things. The government of Taiwan destroyed a Lamborghini Murcielago last year, I think it was.
Yes.
Idiots. You can see it on YouTube. They use a big giant hydraulic claw to destroy this car. That's to drive it home that they don't tolerate any messing around. It was basically just illegally imported. Somebody tried to skirt the tax on importing it.
But still, you don't take a $300,000 vehicle and just kill it like that just to drive a point home. The guy is already losing his car. Was it an import thing or was it a fake tag?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, the fake tag thing has been mentioned in some of the articles, but Road and Tracks article says, message from the Taiwanese government to people trying to skirt the country's hefty vehicle import tax.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. If a person illegally immigrates somewhere and they talk about deportation, do the same to the car. For the love of God, don't kill the car. Deport it. Send it away.
I saw one interesting comment.
Someone, save it.
Yeah. Someone said, don't do that to a car. Imagine how many people you could have fed with $300,000. You know?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
You would have saved the car. You would have really hurt that person. But if they sold it to collect the taxes, they could have... You know, you're right.
They could have sold it back to the guy. His $300,000 car is now a $600,000 car.
Or double the taxes that he skirted or something.
Right. So I'm reminded of the rule, or not the rule, I can't remember which Star Trek movie it came out of, but the quote is, it's Bones. Bones is saying, the bureaucratic mentality is the only universal constant. it's just people with no imagination whatsoever couldn't figure out if there was a better way to do something with a work of art car like that.
But would we be so upset if it wasn't such a cool car?
Would I be upset if it was a Ford Fiesta?
All right, yeah.
No. That's a decent right. question.
I don't think we'd be as upset if it were a Fiesta.
Yeah, you can't see us. Our listeners can't see us, but we're all sort of looking at each other like,
Yeah. Well, we all have different ideas of what a great car or a work of art car is.
Oh, yes.
There might be some differences there, but is there really a Ford Fiesta following?
I think my answer is still going to be don't destroy the car. Right? I mean, if the point is to say to the public, don't illegally, you know, drive an import here, then sure, like Katie said, tax them twice. Make them pay some fines. Make them do community service work or something.
Right.
But don't kill the car.
I like the initial idea of how many people that could feed.
Yeah.
The government could definitely have gone a long way. Of course, then again, a government that destroys a work of art car, a Lamborghini, are they likely to give to the people, or are they likely to pocket it for themselves? Well, I mean, would they really be feeding the people is the question, too.
No.
Because apparently they're evil. I'm just saying.
So what else is going on? Katie, you said something about a ride. Are you going to go to this thing?
I'm going to try. I mean, it's the Military Veterans of Georgia 3rd Annual Ride for Heroes. It's on May 6, 2017. Hearing it later than that date. It's at Whistle Stop Park in Auburn, Georgia.
Okay.
It's $20 entry fee, and all the money proceeds go to the Veterans Resource Center and Veterans Memorial, which also in turn helps train service dogs for the veterans.
Cool.
And it's like a motorcycle, Jeep ride, and show.
Okay.
Is this $20 to come in as a spectator or $20 to be a participant?
To be a participant in the ride. The passengers and everything is free. If you just want to go.
So $20 to get a vehicle to get part of it. He's got a vehicle big enough. Pay. The thing about cars on it.
Right, really. Yeah. We need a thing about cars minivan.
Or a convertible.
Or a big convertible or something.
I don't think we have to wear
seatbelts. I can help with that.
Yeah.
Just paint and...
Exactly.
Or we could get the minivan, chop the top off.
You're reading my mind.
Yeah, there you go.
Take the doors off, turn the whole thing into... We need to do this.
Oh, yeah.
We need a garage. A bunch of us should have a warehouse somewhere we could just work on stuff and make all kinds of weird things.
Well, that would be awesome.
Until our sponsors chip in enough cash to do that, y'all are welcome to come mess around in my garage.
That's right. We haven't heard anything new about the garage. There was the hunt for a house with a garage and whatnot.
Ben has a good update, I think. You want
to? Yeah, well, this was 4 months ago. I moved into the house that I bought. We did one of these sessions one day, and I was going from it, or the next day I was going to go house shopping, and I found a place that has about 1,000 square feet of basement level garage. It's great. You just drive up, the driveway kind of curves up the side, and there's two garage doors with a human door between them, and the space extends about 2/3 of the way under the house. And I've been doing the epoxy floor and everything, and rearranging where the work. It came with two big solid workbenches. I mean, these things are handmade by the guy who lived there before out of 2x6s. You could park motorcycles on top of them probably and nothing would break.
Wow.
So in fact, I had to use car dollies to move them. They're so heavy. So I've got those finally where I want them. The lighting is about right. I didn't have to mess with that much. Huge pegboard on one wall. It's a great workspace. It's not tall enough because it's basement level. It's not tall enough to put a lift in it.
That's where I was waiting to go. Does anybody have, a 10-foot ceiling, something? What would we need to get? Because at CarQuest, you can buy the lifts.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't. You can't get the cars high enough. In standard garages,
Go
ahead.
Well, there is an alternative to that that I've considered. I don't really need a lift. I mean, I'm okay with...
You need a lift.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the smallest person in the world, but I can generally get under with standard jacks and stands to do what I need to do. Of course, a little more space would be nice.
See, this is when I bring over my Mustang with the 2-inch clearance, and you go, damn it, we need a lift.
Katie?
What you could do is just get one of, make just an overpass outside or something that's like...
Yeah.
15 feet tall or something like that, 15, 20 feet tall, and put a lift up out there.
Three letters for you, H-O-A.
Which I don't have in my neighborhood, and it probably look a little ugly anyway. However, another thing.
Well, what if it's in the backyard, though? Because then it could be changed into like a deck.
Okay, I'm going to let Ben keep going with this, and you guys obviously aren't going to be able to hear my response. I'm going to show a picture to Katie of what my house looks like, and then you might just hear,
Yeah, my backyard is actually above garage level too, but there is another interesting solution I may employ. Somebody makes a thing, I believe the product name is MaxJack. It's a little electric thing. It's two little beams that come up under the rocker panels of your car and lifts it about 18 inches off the floor. And it's portable. You don't have to bolt it to the floor like with a post-type lift. It's a thing you can stow in a corner. It takes up little space. You stick it under the car, you plug it in, and it lifts your whole car about 18 inches or more off the floor.
Wait, I feel like I just missed something really awesome.
MaxJack.
Is this the one that's still a few $1,000, but it's the small thing and you slide underneath it and...
It's about $1,500 to $1,800 depending on which one you get.
I think I know the one you're talking about.
Which is still a whole lot less than getting a post lift.
All right, Becca, let's see the house.
Okay, so see, the problem is that my house is actually built into a hill. Yeah. And you can't see from the picture very well.
That's
the backyard just keeps going up.
Yeah.
My poor children literally have to play in the streets. It pretty much plateaus enough where the house was built and then just keeps going up from the backyard.
Right.
So there's nowhere to put it.
I like the idea of a deck that comes down and turns into your lifts. Like Ben over his garages could build a deck next to the bedrooms up top.
Oh, yeah.
And so just lower it and then drive onto it and then lift it. And then when it's not in use, it's just your deck.
I love that. Have you seen the one with the hidden garage, though, that raises up and then drops down into the garage?
No.
Down into the ground?
I think so, yeah.
Do you know the one I'm talking about? I have to find this.
Awesome.
I've also got a spare bedroom above one corner of the garage. I could just, you know, take the floor out of there, you know. And have like a lift go all the way up into that spare bedroom, then have a little walkway into it.
Exactly.
See, no, this is when it gets crazy for me, though. You know I would love for my Mustang to actually be in the Mustang room. Because then life would just be
perfect,
complete. Mm-hmm. And yes, so, see, now my brain is going.
Well, not let's go back to the notion of getting our own warehouse. I mean, and figuring out how that happens, and not quite unrelated. We use Pinecast to broadcast these podcasts, so to speak. Pinecast is the service we use to get on iTunes and Google Play, and they have a tip jar available, which we've linked from our website. And if we get any tips, if anyone should actually visit the website and leave a tip there, I think one of the first things we need to do is get some dynamic microphones, improve our equipment a little bit so that we can have a little more control over the recording environment and make things better. But, you know, hey, if we get some large enough tips, maybe we'll buy a warehouse and put an honest-to-God car lift in it and start making cool things and doing stuff with that. So if anyone's listening.
And maybe we rent it out to listeners, too.
Yeah.
Or
have a listener appreciation party.
Say what, Katie?
Or do videos or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's on the website.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's one of the things that I talked about, not only of car repairs or going places, but even here, just so that they can see us being silly in here. So we have a tip jar. We will podcast for money.
You know, Victor left. He couldn't join us for this particular episode, but he does video production, and he will be joining us again in the future. So, but what else we got? There are other car shows that we've had our eyes on from time to time. To the listener, we wanted to make it clear that we have in the back of our minds going to car shows with a portable recorder and talking to folks about their cars. So that may still happen. If you guys out there know of a cool car show that we should come see, or if you have a ride that we should come talk to you about, please tell us. We'd be happy to either invite you into the studio or come out and see your ride and maybe get some pictures of it up online. And let's just have a little bit of fun together. But Becca, you were looking for something?
I can read the headlines now. This one says Stealth Garage. The problem is that for some reason my signal is not doing well. I know this made its rounds on,
get you on Wi-Fi.
Pinterest. So, yeah, that's probably the problem.
Well,
I'm not on the Wi-Fi.
Thinking about really cool custom garages, there's a thing I saw, and this is something none of us can afford, but there was a thing, one of these guys in, you know, California, some billionaire who loves cars and has multi-million dollar Duesenbergs and things in his collection. He has this underground garage in his house. Now, the house has basically one standard size garage door to get everything in and out through. And he got tired of having this shuffle because he's got a great amount of space behind that door. He actually installed a turntable that from any corner of the garage, a car can drive onto the turntable, then be aimed at the door and drive out. And I thought, well, that's really cool. If you've got a whole lot of space and you've got a whole lot of cars and you've got the money to do this kind of thing, that is pretty cool.
We do need to get the next caffeine octane on our radar.
Yes, we do.
And we should at least
for Sunday of every month.
For Sunday of every month.
First Sunday.
So we should probably also get Thing About Cars t-shirts so that people will know exactly who we are. And
I was thinking about that not too long ago, though.
So here's my hesitation on that, and this is where we bore the hell out of our listener. But we have this logo, and it's been said to me over and over again that we should probably get a new logo. Do we get t-shirts now and then get t-shirts again with the new logo on them, or do we...
Just put it like a sticker.
And then get a sticker. I love it. That's exactly right. That's exactly what we'll do. Okay, here we go. What is that?
This is the garage, so I'll pass it around so everybody can see it, but see how it...
It's submerged, not submerged, it's recessed parking for your...
It goes down into the driveway, now you can park on top of it.
But it's not a lift, exactly, it's just a hidden parking.
No, it's not a lift. This was just about the garage feature of you can put a car down into the ground.
Which, man, I would so use that as like a secret entrance to another office or something.
Right, so the back to the next car.
Heck yeah.
Let's put that on our Facebook so our listeners can see it.
Yes.
Definitely. Well, the reason I think about this, with this being a tornado-prone area, I've been in a few in my lifetime, so it makes me a little jumpy. That way you can tuck your car underground when the tornado sirens start going off. Protect the cars! Forget the children, they can run. Get the car in the ground. That kind of thing, you know.
Well, not that bad. At least you don't have, like, I don't know, a room full of Corvettes that's suddenly swallowed by a sinkhole.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
I
cried, man.
I'm surprised how not that many people that I know that are car people that didn't know about that. And they were like, wait, that happened? And I'm like, yeah, that happened a couple years ago. This is like...
They made a little mini documentary about it, actually.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, a couple of years ago, the Corvettes are produced in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and there's a Corvette museum in Bowling Green, and a sinkhole opened up under the museum, and a bunch of rare cars in the collection went in the sinkhole.
And all got destroyed.
Well, not all of them.
They got crunched up pretty bad.
There was one that was unrepairable. Everything else was restored. Like the 1 millionth car production, I know that they restored it. And actually, a cool thing about that is whenever it first went through production, all the people who worked on it signed their names on to whatever part that they were doing onto the car. And they actually got to, whenever they restored it, got the names, all but two of them, they transferred it onto if they needed a part or something like that. And they actually flew out the two people that worked on it to re-sign it.
Wow.
Yeah, I was just like, that's pretty cool how...
they brought it back.
Yeah, they brought it back.
And that's what I was thinking, though, as far as totaling out a vehicle, it's going to be based on a percentage of the cost to repair it. If these cars are that valuable, they're going to have that much more money to spend on it, and parts still cost the same amount. Now, the problem is going to run into the parts that have been signed, the parts that are harder to find, things like that. The more valuable the car, the further you have to damage it to total it out.
Yeah.
So
I know there was one where it didn't have like any of the you couldn't see the body at all. It was just you could see some tires and some of the chassis, and that was it. And it was completely destroyed, and that was the one that was, I think it was the first one to go in, but where everything else crumpled on top of it. Like the Blue Devil was fine. Then the C1, it only had like a couple dents and some of the glass broke, but that was it.
That was it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, they opened it up. Am I right in thinking that the part of the floor is transparent, or did they just build over it and draw a circle where the hole used to be?
I have no idea.
The floor would be transparent where you could see cars still down there?
No, you could see the sinkhole or something.
Okay.
I don't know why they'd want to do that, but
And I don't know why that's in my brain. I could be hallucinating. I'm not really sure.
What wouldn't it be like going out to visit the site of the Titanic? Some horrible tragedy happened here. Come look.
People do that.
Yes, exactly.
People love that stuff. I mean, I kind of wonder if that's half the reason why people watch racing. They're there for the accidents.
Oh, you know they are.
Yeah.
You know they are.
At least with NASCAR. It's like, driving skill and engineering is fine, but
it's like watching Daredevil, Evel Knievel. You know, you're waiting for him to mess up.
Yeah.
Thinking about restorations of things like that, now these aren't museum cars. Well, it could be at the quality level that they will come out. I read recently that Jaguar are going to be restoring 10 E-types. to original factory spec. This is done by Jaguar themselves, and they're going to sell for $1 to $2 million a piece, depending on which one they are and I guess what they have to do to them. But you know, you could get a really, really well-restored E-Type for a lot less money, but somebody here is buying that cachet that Jaguar themselves did the job. It's an interesting idea, and they probably will sell them without any problem. Interestingly, too, Aston Martin are apparently about to produce 25 brand new DB4 GTs.
Oh, yeah.
This is a car they made from 1959 to, I believe, 63.
Okay.
They're going to be for track only, because there's no way they'll comply with modern regulations, and I don't know what they're going to cost.
Right.
But the fact that they're going to do it just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah.
The DB4 GT, of course, is the predecessor of the DB5, which we all know from Goldfinger. It's kind of similar styling.
Again, you know, these really cool-looking cars, super expensive. And on the one hand, I'm in awe that they're going to do this stuff.
Yeah.
On the other hand, maybe I'm just getting old and what's the word, curmudgeonly.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm never going to be able to afford one of those. Why do I care?
Well, somebody else cares.
It's sometimes just the idea of it's available again. And right now, I'm trying to find...
It is cool.
Like
the 50th anniversary Ferrari in Japan thing, it's like...
Oh, right, yeah. They're basically, it's a spin-off version of the 48 Spider. Ferrari's been in Japan for 50 years. They're doing a special Japan-only model just to celebrate that. If you can't afford a Ferrari and you don't live in Japan, why do you care?
Right.
But, you know, it's a neat idea.
I mean, it is cool, right? I guess it's a moment in automotive history.
Yeah, so I don't think they did that for any other country. They've been for 50 years, so...
Right. Yeah.
Right. And I guess it says more about me than I should probably actually talk about it, because it's like, I can't drive it. Why do I care? You know?
No.
No.
And I'm being frustrated trying to find something here. There's actually a company who is producing new classic Mustangs. So along the same lines. Now, however, there's a little caveat with mine, and I am struggling to find this article again. There's a company out there, and I'll probably have to circle around another time. They're building classic, I want to say it's somewhere around 67 to 69, something like that, Mustangs, but they're building them as new vehicles,
right,
fully VIN'd and emissions compliant and all that, modernized, but on this pony chassis, this original pony chassis. The thing that caused me to blow several veins on it, however, is they decided the most cost-effective approach was to use LS engines. And I had a rather nasty post on my...
What's wrong with an LS motor?
I can't say the words that are popping into my head. Nothing. I own an LS. I'm not going to put it in my Mustang.
Right.
It's a GM engine. It's not Ford.
Yeah, that's the biggest
It's impure. That. It's blasphemy. It's after LS swap. It's...
Okay.
You know?
No, I do understand that.
My LS is a good engine, but no!
It's sort of my job to give you a hard time on my...
Yes.
I recently rewatched that Wheeler Dealers episode where they found a Maserati and they put an electric motor in it because it had already had an electric motor in it. So they found a Maserati Biturbo that the owner had put an electric motor in probably in the 80s or the 90s. And so they bought it and they they teched up everything, right? Brand new tandem motors and the whole shebang. And apparently there's actually a small niche industry where they're taking old cars.
Oh, yes.
Ripping out all the fuel engines and putting in the electrics.
Recently at the Georgia Tech Auto Show, I saw an early 80s Toyota pickup that someone had converted to electric power. It was really pretty cool.
Well, I guess it's along the same notion of the people that were totally retooling cars for the biodiesel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I understand, but there are certain cars that you just... They're sacred. You don't do that to. Leave it alone. Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, an old Mercedes that smells like donuts when it runs, hey, I can get on board with that.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, we run out of time, and we promise to pick up these and many more interesting things to talk about next time we get together. So, once again, thank you for listening. This is The Thing About Cars at Strongbox West. Check them out at strongboxwest.com. Check us out at thethingaboutcars.com or on our Facebook page. And we look forward to talking to you guys again soon. Have a great week. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.